The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about creating a better workplace and developing positive relationships where people can thrive. I'm Roy Saunderson, along with my colleague, Max Brown.
Hi, everybody.
And we're from the Recognition Management Institute. Now, Max, where are you sitting, standing today?
Well, today you find me in Bangalore, India, attending a conference here and delighted to be in Asia, having just finished a little bit in Hong Kong and today in Bangalore. So happy to be with everyone tonight.
Wonderful. And I'm from the most southern town in Canada, Kingsville, Ontario. And we're very delighted to have our guest today, Matthew Gwarich, chair of the Organizational Studies Program in the School of Professional Studies and the director of the Organizational Health Initiative at St. Louis University, and Dr. David Ballard, the Assistant Executive Director for Marketing and Business Development at the American Psychological Association and the APA Practice Organization. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Matt, where are you based right now, and David after that?
I am currently in St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay.
And I'm in Washington, D.C., but as we're speaking about work-life balance and flexibility issues, I'm actually working from home today.
Ah, wonderful.
Excellent.
Well, let's see, Matt, I know you teach courses at St. Louis University in the areas of motivation, occupational health, organizational theory, and leadership. And Matt also serves as I said, the director of the Organizational Health Initiative. And Matt conducts research in the areas of stress, a healthy workplace, and serves as the primary research consultant to APA for its psychologically healthy workplace program. Similarly, David designs and directs efforts related to health and well-being in the workplace, continues the research and development and strategic consulting in those areas, and he spearheads the Psychologically Healthy Workplace Program in a collaborative effort between the APA and the APA Practice Organization, designing and educating employer communities about the link between employee health and well-being and organizational performance. And I had the great opportunity of being with them at the Psychological Healthy Workplace Conference earlier this year in Washington, D.C. Again, mm-hmm. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show. And obviously, when we're looking at this whole aspect of the psychological healthy workplace, I understand you have a book coming forward on the psychologically healthy workplace, building a win-win environment for organizations and employees. Can you tell us a little bit about how this all came about?
Sure. The book is actually set to be published by the American Psychological Association. And as we continue to work in the areas of employee health and well-being and organizational performance, we really found a need to put some information out there that really connects the latest cutting-edge current thinking and research in the areas we talk about, as well as real practical applied knowledge. So the book is organized according to the five key areas that we discussed that I'm sure we'll talk more about today, and we've brought together experts on both sides, scientific experts, practitioner experts, to share their insights about each of the areas. So the book is really split into two chapters on each subject, one research-based and one practical and applied, to help organizational leaders, HR professionals, and consultants and psychologists who work with those communities to help them create more effective, healthy workplaces.
Wonderful. Now, what do we mean by a psychologically healthy workplace?
Well, that's a good place to start, because there's often a misunderstanding that when we're talking about a psychologically healthy workplace, that all we care about is the mental health benefit or the EAP services or stress in the workplace. And while all of those things are certainly important, that's just one piece of the picture. A psychologically healthy workplace is really one that fosters employee health and well-being and organizational performance. And there's no single way to do that, but what we find is the kinds of practices that help to that end generally fall into five categories: employee involvement, work-life efforts, employee growth and development opportunities, health and safety initiatives, and then employee reward and recognition.
Now, those are very broad areas. You know, obviously a lot of companies are kind of looking at them and saying, well, is there any kind of return that they can get from this? So have you found that there's any proof of a link between employee health and well-being and organizational performance?
We actually looked at that as we were putting our model together, and Matt will fill you in on some of that in a minute. But in general, there's research out there that talks about a lot of these areas. There was a study done by the Health Enhancement Research Organization back a number of years ago that looked at large private and public sector employers, and what they found was that modifiable risk factors were associated with about 25% of the total health expenditures in an organization. And another meta-evaluation of peer-reviewed journal articles on worksite health promotion programs found a lot of outcomes. There was a 26% reduction in sick leave absenteeism, 26% reduction in health costs, about a reduction of about a third in terms of workers' comp and disability management claims, and a $5.81 savings for every dollar invested in these worksite health promotion programs. And there are similar studies in the areas of training and development and work life and so on. So there is some research out there that points to cost savings when programs are done well. That's not saying that any program is going to generate a 3-to-1 return on investment.
Right.
But when a program is designed well to fit the actual needs of the employees in the organization, it can have very positive return. Let me give you one more example of data. With our Psychologically Healthy Workplace Awards that we give every year, where we recognize organizations that are doing these things well, our 2010 winners outperformed the national average in a variety of areas. So, for example, our 2010 winners had a 9% total separation rate, so that's employee turnover, compared to 41% nationally in the United States. 30% of employees reported experience regular work stress, or stress work stress on a regular basis, compared to 41% nationally. One of the most striking features was that in our award-winning organizations, only 12% of employees said they intended to seek employment elsewhere within the next 12 months. That's compared to 31% nationally. So when we're comparing our winning organizations to the national average, they're outperforming that in a variety of ways.
Whew. And I think we need to go back to your model again, I think, for listeners to kind of really get the feel for what they can gain in the same way, or these same kind of benefits. Can you just describe again those five elements of your model for a psychologically healthy workplace?
Sure.
Practices
you do? It's really a complex systems model. So it's not looking to intervene or put programs in one area. It really emphasizes the need to take a comprehensive approach to creating a healthy workplace. And the areas, again, are employee involvement, health and safety, work-life efforts, employee recognition, and growth and development opportunities. And all of those things collectively, along with communication within the organization, affect employee well-being and organizational functioning and performance, which in turn both affect each other.
Okay. So an employee shows up for work to do their job. Is that what you mean by employee involvement, or is there more to it than that?
Matt, you want to field that one? Because we worked together on an article on employee involvement a while back, and so there was some good information from that.
Yeah.
Okay. Matt?
I most certainly will. So when we talk about employee involvement, I mean, employee involvement really is a lot more than just simply showing up to work.
Okay.
Showing up to work and simply doing your job either to the bare minimum. You know, that's not really being involved in the organization. But if you think about employee involvement is really can be sort of conceptualized as the opportunity to be involved in decision making, to sort of take control over the way you perform different job activities, different functions during the course of a day. And there's different levels of involvement, you know.
Okay.
And as David mentioned in the article that we published, you know, we talked about kind of sort of five different levels of involvement. And at the lowest level of involvement, everything is sort of management driven. Managers come in, they tell people how to do things, how to perform their job. They tell them, here's the different initiatives that we've got. And employees are simply supposed to buy into it. And
right.
As you work your way up the continuum, you get into much, much more of a sort of a partnership between managers and employees in terms of how decisions are made. Ultimately, at the top, you get into much, much more employee-driven kinds of systems, like high-involvement work systems and self-managed work teams and employee ownership. And those would really be the sort of the maximal level of involvement that you could ask for in an organization. But, you know, sort of going back to this whole notion of there isn't a best way to necessarily implement these different kinds of practices, you know, the type of employee involvement that an organization needs is going to be kind of dictated by, you know, the culture of that organization, the
yep.
industry in which it operates, and even to a large extent, the kind of involvement that employees are looking for in the workplace.
Mm. Mm. Now, do you have an example of a company that could kind of show a best practice, if you will, of employee involvement?
Yeah, let me give you two quick examples, because I think, as Matt said, a lot of it really does have to do with how well an organization is customizing the practices to meet its own needs. So it's going to look different organization to organization, but I'll give you two quick examples. One is Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare, and they were one of our 2010 Psychologically Healthy Workplace Award winners. In 2003, Tallahassee Memorial was at a crossroads. They were in financial crisis, morale was low, productivity was declining, their reputation in the community was slipping a bit. And so following a change in leadership, what they decided is to bring together employees from all levels and all departments across the organization, including the service staff, clinical and professional staff, and they participated on committees that were tasked with developing new values and mission statements. And they got input from all staff members across the organization, set goals, met regularly, and they drafted the statements that ultimately, after a number of rounds of revision, were adopted by the organization. So they created this new value statement and mission statement, but then that got incorporated into all facets of the organization. It got built into their reward and recognition programs. It got built into their performance reviews, training, and the operational components of the organization. So the fact that employees worked together to create this new mission and value statement really eased the ownership and adoption across the organization. They've seen a reduction in customer complaints, performance issues, and patient satisfaction scores have all increased. They've seen improvement in its community reputation. Their finances have improved. And, in fact, in 2008, Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare was actually named as one of modern healthcare's best places to work in healthcare. So it really contributed to a huge turnaround. And mission statements and values, that's nothing new, but it's the way they did it and the way
okay.
they designed and implemented it with employee input that really
mm-hmm.
was employee involvement at its core.
Well, that's an exciting example, and I think, as you said, it's not like maybe the practices that were going on or anything new. It's how they involved the individuals, treat them as people rather than just as numbers.
Absolutely, and it really shows how important it is to get that built into the culture of an organization. In the other example, just very briefly, is Coleman Professional Services in Ohio, and they acquired a new facility as part of their programming, and what they found, it was an outdated building. It had poor workspace, poor lighting. Staff safety was compromised. They couldn't deliver the services as effectively as they might to the individuals they were serving. So what they did is actually actually bring employees together to work with architects and designers who were constructing the new facility for them. So they had regularly scheduled team meetings that allowed employees to have input throughout the whole process. They didn't just survey employees at the beginning to ask what they needed. They had them involved all the way from design to building. And in fact, at the very end, what they found is it was almost ready to open. It was scheduled for move-in, and employees went out to tour the site and found a few problems that needed to be corrected. So even though correcting those delayed the opening of the facility, the organization followed the employees' input, and the end result was they had a fantastic new facility with plenty of space for client activities, workspace for staff. And they've, since the completion of the facility, they've had turnover drop by more than 30%. Morale and satisfaction have improved. The number of clients they serve is up by 60%. So involving employees in creating their own workspace really paid off for them.
Wonderful. Those are very powerful examples. Thank you very much. Listen, it's time for us to take a short break. This is Roy Saunderson and Max Brown with our guests today, Matthew Groich and David Ballard, and you're listening to Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Please stay tuned.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Are you looking for a show to help you increase your sales and subsequently your income? Want to know what works and what doesn't? Do you want to have some fun and learn at the same time? Listen for Let's Talk Sales to Increase Your Income with Len and Jack. Yep, it's a long title, but it's designed to educate you, the effective sales professional. Each week, hosts Len DiNincenzo and Jack Cullen will help you stay focused on doing the basics of your trade consistently well. Tune in Mondays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and Max Brown. And our guest today, Dr. Groich and Dr. Ballard. Both of you have so much more education than I could possibly put behind my name that I thought I should put that in there and make sure people understand where you're coming from when it comes to this research. You know, that first segment was fascinating for me. You talk a lot about this leadership and some experiences here where you're talking about companies that are trying to get things done better, trying to show this care and compassion. But what about those companies where managers don't get it? Or more importantly, here's an employee who feels stuck in a situation, but they're afraid to lose the job, so they're stuck in it, but they don't feel like the leadership gets it.
Well, you know, if you look at a lot of, now I come out of the sort of organizational development approach to creating a psychologically healthy workplace. A lot of my background, my training really emphasizes the importance of getting commitment and buy-in to different kinds of initiatives, different kinds of programs and policies as you implement them. And, you know, what it all ultimately boils down to is there has to be buy-in at the top. If the, you know, the CEO and the C-suite executives don't buy into this whole idea of creating a psychologically healthy workplace, then expecting it to sort of cascade down throughout the rest of the organization is probably a little bit naive. You know, you can create little pockets, even within the worst organizations, little pockets of sort of psychologically healthy workplaces in terms of like departments and work units, but you're not going to see it translate into sort of organizational wide initiatives if it doesn't have the support, the commitment, the sort of buy-in by top management. And in some respects, you're actually talking about taking this whole idea of a psychologically healthy workplace and turning it into the sort of one of the, at least one of the foundations of the organization's sort of strategic direction.
Does fear play a role then? Like how does fear impact people if it dominates in a workplace? Because I know a lot of workplaces that I come into and I just feel like, oh, afterwards I need a bath.
Well, you know, there's a lot of work these days on this whole idea of workplace bullying and toxic bosses and you know, I what can you do about it? I mean, at some point, yes, you know, we talked about employee involvement and the importance of getting employees involved in terms of making decisions and helping to make changes throughout the organization. But the reality is that not every organization is going to become a psychologically healthy workplace. And, you know, if you are not in a position to be able to start making some of those changes that would be necessary to move your organization along that sort of psychologically healthy workplace continuum, then, you know, perhaps it may be time for you to think about looking for, you know, something else. I mean, one of the things that we know is about the issue of engagement is that a lot of being engaged in the workplace is a function of how well you feel like you fit with your organization, with your supervising, with your subordinates, with your peers, with the kinds of work that you have to do. And so, you know, sometimes feeling like my boss, for instance, is a tyrant may be a function of poor fit between you and your supervisor. And so there are times when it makes sense for you to think about, you know, are there ways for me to either improve the fit or to find something else that might be a better fit?
And Matt, I would also add that the same is true on the organizational side of things, that, you know, that there's got to be a champion of these kinds of practices, that the leaders have to be committed. But if the organization is really going to commit to this and build it in as part of its culture, to have a healthy workplace culture, then sure, it can do education of some of the key leaders and folks within the organization. It can present data. It can show what kinds of returns. It can give examples of companies that are doing this and getting results. But sometimes it does require some organizational change. And, you know, from building in the assessment and selection process, so you're bringing in people to the organization that are a good fit for this, but sometimes it means removing people who aren't after you've made efforts that haven't been successful to try to move them that direction.
Yes. Let's go to the positive side of it for a minute and look at the employee recognition, which is part of your model. Can you tell us a little bit more, how did you determine this to be a factor and how important is recognition?
Well, in some of the original work that we did when we went through and we reviewed a lot of the literature, you know, a lot of the psychologically healthy workplace model is an integration of literature across, you know, psychology and business and management and nursing and marketing and all kinds of different literatures across different disciplines were reviewed in order to create this framework. And one of the pieces that was almost always implied but really never explicitly mentioned was this whole idea of employee recognition. And, you know, as a psychologist, you know, recognition has long history in psychology. I mean, you go back and you talk about things like, you know, positive reinforcement. You know, positive reinforcement can be a form of recognition. Goal setting, oftentimes goal setting theory involves sort of recognizing the contributions that people make and recognizing people when they achieve goals. But it was almost always included as a sort of necessary ingredient of different areas without ever really teasing it apart. But there is and has been a sort of small group of literature that's out there that has emphasized the importance of recognition, and that sometimes recognition isn't just important as a part of other programs. You know, for example, recognizing people who participate in different kinds of wellness initiatives. But
yeah,
sometimes recognition is a standalone type of practice, and so it was important within the model to kind of pull that out and to say, you know, look, yes, sometimes you want to include it as a part of other programs, but sometimes it's important to just simply to walk around and, you know, tell people thank you, thanks for the contributions that you make. That alone can be a practice that in some ways almost transforms the culture into one that actually supports and recognizes the contributions that people make.
Yeah, interesting. It's interesting because recognition can play a huge role if it's just done properly, right?
Absolutely, it gets at, you see out there in the literature and out in the employer community, there's a lot of talk about incentives and reward structures, but there's very little talk and very little research done about recognition, which isn't just about in aligning the organizational's rewards.
So what could we do with that? That's a great, great point to ask. I mean, what can we do to get better research on the effectiveness of employee recognition practices then?
Well, I think one of the sort of first steps is that somebody needs to be out there showing that, you know, recognition is sort of different than the traditional conceptualization of rewards, that really what we're talking about are rewards and recognition. And that when you study them differently or you study them as sort of separate entities, that
yes,
these two things maybe sometimes produce similar results. Maybe there's sort of deviations in terms of the different outcomes that we see when you use rewards versus recognition. But what we, in order to get it more accepted within the actual scholarly literature, somebody needs to actually come forward and say, hey, I've got a plan for how to study this, and to then go about it and produce research that produces results.
Yeah. So we have a lot of things that are pointing us towards this and saying that it's the right thing to do, but there's more that can be done.
There's a lot more that can be done. And in fact, yeah, I think in some ways, just like APA emphasizing the importance of recognition in and of itself, I think is really, really important. Because, for example, you know, you can look at various types of literature on things like, you know, occupational health and health and productivity management, and you will oftentimes not see any mention of the word recognition. You'll hear all about incentives, and you'll hear all about rewarding people, but you won't necessarily hear anything about recognition. And and that's where you know, people need to kind of take a step back and say, conceptually, I understand the difference between the two, and now then also I understand how to put these two things into practice in different ways.
Well, that's a perfect segment, a perfect place for us to pause for a minute while we take a break. But when we come back, let's get into this some more, because I want to talk a little bit more about what can we give listeners to give them hope that this is something they can do and apply. So when we come back, join us in just a few minutes on Real Recognition Radio, of course, with our guests Matthew Grawich and David Ballard. And we're going to talk more about building a positive workplace environment for recognition. For right now, this is Real Recognition Radio with Max Brown and Roy Saunderson, and we'll be right back.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Did you know that the number one concern of American business is the ability to attract and retain qualified workers? Yet millions of qualified American workers with disabilities are sitting on the sidelines. Disabilities at Work Radio focuses on businesses and their workforce needs and also offers other topics of interest to people with disabilities, their families, and supporters. Join Disabilities at Work Radio every Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on The Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Did you know that the number one concern of American business is the ability to attract and retain qualified workers? Yet millions of qualified American workers with disabilities are sitting on the sidelines. Disabilities at Work Radio focuses on businesses and their workforce needs and also offers other topics of interest to people with disabilities, their families, and supporters. Join Disabilities at Work Radio every Wednesday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you a wow? A wise, outrageous woman of a certain age who wants thrilling work, vibrant health, joyful relationships, financial freedom, and the new F word, fun, in the next stage of life? Join host Lynn Schreiber in the Wow Zone each week, where you'll meet amazing women who are creating lives filled with passion, purpose, and pizzazz. In the Wow Zone, broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Anything is possible.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with myself, Roy, and Max, with our guests today, Matthew Grorich and David Ballard. As we kind of ended off our last segment there, Max alluded to the whole concept of application, and we find that a lot of our listeners are certainly wanting to implement solid ideas and practices from our show. You talk about this psychological healthy workplace model. How do people put this into place? What do you typically recommend potential best winners of your award?
Well, my first reaction to that is what I find often is that organizations want to jump straight to the implementation phase. And
right.
By doing that, they're really ignoring some important parts of the process. And it is a process. It's not just about implementing a single practice and you're done. It really starts with doing a good assessment and understanding what the employee and organization's needs are, as well as their preference related to recognition. I see lots of rewards and recognition that are doled out in organizations that are things that the employees couldn't care less about. It's often a joke in many organizations, the sort of years of service recognition that people get, that who really cares, or they're given something as a reward that's of absolutely no value to them. So
right.
Really starting out with a good comprehensive assessment and using those data to custom tailor the practices, to design them in a way that meets those needs, then implementing them and making sure that you build into that process some ongoing evaluation so that you can fine-tune those over time and don't throw the baby out with the bathwater if it's not generating the results you anticipated right off the bat.
Right.
So it takes patience? Is that what you're suggesting? We have to, I mean, some of the companies, you know, they want results fast. They want to be able to say, okay, we're going to put a recognition program in, and boom, we help next quarter, you know, the employee engagement scores better go up. Well, what do we say to these folks?
Well, the problem with that particular perspective, though, is that if you walk into a situation like that and you assume, for instance, what kind of recognition is going to motivate and engage people, you may be putting a whole lot of time, energy, money into something that isn't going to work. It would be better off if organizations spent at least some time trying to figure out if they say, you know, we know that there are recognition issues in this organization. You know, the first step is to really figure out then if you really want to use recognition as a way to engage your employees, and that's the area that you have identified as an area you need to target, then you need to figure out what kinds of recognition are going to engage and motivate the employees. Because, you know, there's a whole lot of organizations out there, for example, that use this sort of total rewards sort of mindset, and they assume that, for example, you know, employees can stockpile all these points and buy all of these goodies. And that's terrific, except that if those aren't the kinds of things that are motivating, for example, your top performers, then you're spending a whole lot of time and a whole lot of energy on something that isn't going to produce a whole lot of results.
And Matt, I'd say the flip side to that, because while it's certainly true that many organizations put a lot of resources into something that's not going to work, often programs aren't given a chance because the way they're designed or implemented isn't effective for the particular context. So this applies to the other kinds of practices as well. For example, you have an organization that puts a fitness facility into its actual building, and 6 months later they say, well, let's get rid of this and turn it back into sales offices to generate revenue because nobody's using it. Well, maybe it was a great idea, but the hours it was open weren't the ones employees wanted to use it. Maybe it was only open after work and they wanted to come in early, or maybe there weren't shower facilities so they couldn't freshen up after they exercised to go back to work. Or the same thing with wellness programs. Could be a great diabetes management program put into place, but if the employees aren't ready to actively engage and participate in the program, if they're completion stage, the program is not going to be effective, even if the program itself is very good.
And notice that what this is all starting to sort of tie back to is that practice that we talked about originally, which is employee involvement. The more you can understand where employees are coming from and their ways of thinking and what they're looking for, the more likely you are to be able to make effective decisions to put things into place that will work over time.
And that's part of that whole assessment phase that you've been talking about, right, in the whole assessing, kind of looking at diagnosing what the problem really is, creating a plan, and then also evaluating it. And I think that's a huge part. How do you continue to evaluate some of these practices to know that they're effective?
Well, I'd say the first part of that is determining what outcomes are important to the organization itself. That we talk to different organizations, and they're very often interested in different things. Some are most concerned about reducing health risks or healthcare costs. Others are interested in reducing turnover or keeping retention rates up. Others are concerned with customer service ratings or product and service quality. So the first piece is determining what outcomes are actually important to the organization and its workforce.
Right. Now, obviously, there's a lot of direction here that companies will benefit from using a psychological healthy workplace model. How do employees benefit? And I know it's not so trite in what I asked there, but what are some of the examples and research that you're finding how employees truly get to gain from this psychologically healthy workplace model?
Well, I'll give you the quick thumbnail, and then Matt can talk about some of the research that's going on out there. In general, better physical and mental health for employees, increased job satisfaction, better morale in the workplace, they're more motivated, and they're better able to manage stress that's in the workplace as well. So there are a lot of factors there that, you know, it's good for the employee as well as for the organization.
And drilling down a little bit more specifically, if you will, you know, we collect data periodically from some of the organizations that, that go through APA's, you know, awards process. And in 2008, we had almost 2,000 different employees that were surveyed as a part of the process. And what we found was that people, the employees that had a very strong affinity for the psychologically healthy workplace practices in their organizations were more than 3.5 times more likely to report, you know, having a higher level of general well-being. They were, you know, almost 3.5 times more likely to report, you know, feeling positive in the workplace, being happy in the workplace. They were more than 2.5 times more likely to report greater levels of physical health, and 1.5 times more likely to report greater levels of psychological health. So, I mean, employees definitely get a lot out of a psychologically healthy workplace.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And that must translate into some dollars and figures that's going to produce the bottom line evidence. Do you find companies draw on this model to get at that return on investment model to kind of get those dollar figures back in line?
I would say so. I think the organizations, I think the organizations that really get it, understand the link between the health and well-being of their employees and the performance and success of their organization, that it's not an either or. They're contributing to a workplace where both employees and the organization can thrive. So, but on the organizational side, they're seeing things like better quality, performance, productivity, absenteeism, presenteeism, and turnover dropping, fewer accidents and injuries. They're becoming an employer of choice where they can attract and retain the very best workers, which is really key in today's marketplace. They see better customer service and satisfaction ratings, and they're better able to manage healthcare costs. I wanted to give you a good example from one of our winners this year in terms of some of the outcomes they've seen, and this is related more to the health and safety and wellness side of things. But the American Cast Iron Pipe Company in Alabama, they're one of the world's largest manufacturers of pipe, hydrants, and valves for the waterworks industry. They're well known in the industry for having a very robust health and wellness program. So on campus, they offer medical, dental, x-ray, mammography, specialty services. They've got about 9,000 employees on their campus there. And they're seen as really cutting edge, especially among manufacturing companies. So they've got physical rehab and aerobics room, fitness instructors. They do on-site physical therapy and conditioning so their employees avoid accidents and injuries, and a lot of educational programming. So they go out to the different work units on site and do training and education on diabetes management, injury prevention, nutrition, and so on and so on. And the bottom line is they've seen a measurable return on investment of 2-to-1. Wow. So they've gotten $2 back or $2 in savings for every dollar they've put in. They've had more than 320 employees who've quit smoking, about 1,200 who've started an exercise program, more than 600 who've lowered their blood pressure to within normal limits. The diabetes education program alone has saved the company more than $4 million by reducing health risk and preventing complications. And in addition, the physical therapy and rehab services I mentioned saved them about $175,000 a year. So just in terms of bottom line results, they're getting it.
That's incredible. Mm. And I think those kind of numbers tend to speak volumes to leaders in organizations beyond, as you've said earlier, about having the right commitment. Well, it looks like we're due for a short break again. And so after we come back, we'll go into our final segment with our guests today, Matthew Gorich and David Ballard. And I'm looking forward to hearing a little bit more about how we can get this model that David and Matt have talked about really happening. For Real Recognition Radio, this is Roy Saunderson and Max Brown reminding you to keep it real.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
Stock prices plunging, home prices receding, and unemployment rising to levels not seen since the Great Depression.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio. Let's continue our conversation now with Matthew Grawich and David Ballard, who have been our great guests today, talking about the psychologically healthy workplace. And just before the break there, Roy had suggested, you know, could you tell us a little bit more around how we can encourage management buy-in to this model you've created? And tell us just a little bit more about the workplace program you guys have put together.
Matt, you want to hit on the management buy-in piece, and then I'll talk a bit about the program?
Sounds like a winner. So, you know, when you start talking about management buy-in, obviously one of the best ways to get management buy-in is to, you know, wow them with results. You know, top managers are going to buy into things that are going to produce results. I mean, they are in it to maximize organizational performance as much as possible, especially when you start talking about publicly traded companies. You know, those CEOs and executives are there as long as they continue to produce results. However, what oftentimes sort of gets left out of all of that is that, you know, in many ways, producing the best results doesn't mean working the employees until they fall over. You have to learn to balance, you know, profit with this whole notion of a psychologically healthy workplace. I mean, people will work really, really hard for short periods of time, but if you keep working them too hard for too long, then what's going to end up happening is you're going to start seeing things like job burnout. You're going to start seeing things like turnover. You're going to start seeing things like lowered quality and lowered productivity. And unfortunately for a lot of organizations, they wait until they get to that point before they decide to do something. But if you can show them up front that, you know, there is a way to produce results, that some of these things do work, then you're more likely to get them to buy in to the benefits of a psychologically healthy workplace. And you're starting to see that more and more. There's a lot more organizations out there that are really starting to get it than, say, 10 years ago or 15 years ago.
Matt, I think that's interesting you say that. You know, I really do believe the competitive advantage of the future is in the company that thinks long-term as opposed to just trying to get quarterly reports for shareholders. And while we need the shareholder and the investment there, you know, even to quote Bill George, the author of True North, he was a former CEO of Medtronic, he said, the new breed of CEO has to create sustainable value. So pursuit of the short-term performance is not enough. The performance needs to be allied to purpose. Otherwise, the performance disappears as well. You know, to what you're saying, it sounds like people are catching on, but this is going to be great for employees, good news for them, because instead of just trying to deliver these hard-pressed numbers with no relief or long-term goal for them, it's changing. It seems to be changing in a way that it's honoring employees and saying, hey, you actually are an important part of what we do here. In fact, John Stump, the CEO of Wells Fargo, recently said, we do not call our people employees, they're people. And we don't talk about how we work from the top down to the bottom. That's an insult. In fact, everyone's important. We're all people. So we do not talk about the top or the bottom. We treat our people like people, and we treat them like human beings. So I think, to your point, things are changing.
Yeah, I see this as a fundamental shift. This is a move away from the old corporate model and what I was taught in business school as well, which was the ultimate goal is about maximizing shareholder return. And that's what it was all about. And I think what we're seeing is a shift away from that towards it being about optimizing stakeholder value. And it really is about sustainability. It's getting the best results possible for all of the parties involved.
And building a system in place that allows the organization to continue to see those results. I mean, that's ultimately what's oftentimes left out, is that maximizing, you know, shareholder value in the short term, you know, actually has unintended negative consequences for shareholder value in the long term.
Yes, yes. So with that, could we come back to this again and tell me a little bit about the workplace program you guys have put together?
Sure. The Psychologically Healthy Workplace Program is this collaborative program between the American Psychological Association and the APA Practice Organization, so the practice wing of APA. And it really is designed to make the connection between employee well-being and organizational performance and help employers get there, as well as provide resources for the folks, consultants, psychologists who are working with those organizations. Now, when the program started, it started as just an awards program, recognizing those companies that were doing it well. And it started back in 1999 as a state-level initiative in New Jersey. And APA saw this and thought, this is a great way to really get this message out and demonstrate to organizations what's possible. And so the program really spread across the country and through North America, because now we have 52 state, provincial, and territorial psychological associations that have local award programs. All of those feed into APA's Psychologically Healthy Workplace Awards and Best Practices. So we look at the local winners and do a more in-depth assessment and select the best of the best to recognize. Now, we've moved beyond simply just the awards. That to me is just a tool to highlight organizations that are doing this well and give some good examples and give them the recognition they deserve for what they're doing.
Yeah.
But we've moved on and built additional resources on our website, phwa.org. We've got additional web content, case examples, podcast, blog, and locally there have been about 450 organizations across North America that have been recognized now. So there's lots of informational resources out there, but the awards program is still a really valuable component, even for an organization that doesn't see itself as being at the pinnacle yet but wanting to do better. What we find is many organizations go through the evaluation process for the awards program, and whether they win or not, they say, you know, the award part of it's great, but the real value came from the learning we got out of the process about what we're doing well and what we can do better. So I'd say organizations, even if they feel like they're not quite there yet in terms of being recognized as a psychologically healthy workplace, can gain a lot from the process.
Excellent, excellent. And so you gave us a website just a moment ago there, David. Could you mention that again?
Sure. It's phwa.org.
Excellent. So you're mentioning case studies and all kinds of ways that they can learn a lot more about how to become one of these healthy workplaces.
We're everywhere they are. We're on the web, on the blog, podcast, and all over social media. So anywhere you are online, we're there with information.
So with the last 30 seconds with what we're doing here, would you guys both share maybe 30 seconds each here? What's one final thought or piece of advice you would give to listeners today who want to build this positive workplace environment? What would you say to him?
Matt?
Oh. Okay, I guess I'll take the first 30 seconds so David can use, have some time to think over it.
That's right.
I, I would say that organizations need to remember that there isn't one right way to create a psychologically healthy workplace. And, you know, to be effective, an organization has to create a set of practices, a set of programs that fit with the needs of the organization, that fit with the needs of the employees, and that fit with the way the organization is structured with its values and with its strategic direction.
Great.
And I would just expand on that to say that the link between employee health and well-being and the performance and success of an organization is clear. Provide employees with those resources to help them make good choices, and you'll see results as well, including lower healthcare costs, improved productivity, and a healthier bottom line.
Well, I love that. You know, most recently, I feel like the message for me has been, what's wrong with warm and fuzzy? What's wrong with caring about people at work? Why do we apologize for actually trying to value the people that are delivering good value for us?
You know, Alexis Herman, former Secretary of Labor, in giving a keynote address a few years back, commented, creating a psychologically healthy workplace isn't just the right thing to do, it's also the smart thing to do.
Well, Matt and David, it has been great to have you both on the show. Roy, I'm sure you agree. It's been just a fantastic session today, a fantastic show.
Well, I'm very grateful to have Matt and David at the Psychologically Healthy Workplace Conference. It was a great place to be, and I knew once I met them that it was definitely some guest prospects for the Real Recognition Radio Show.
Well, we love having you there.
I am delighted that you guys were here, and hopefully we can do this again with both of you in the near future as well. We'd always like to stay in touch.
It would be a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Absolutely. We really appreciate that. Folks, we hope you've enjoyed the show today, and we'd like to encourage you to stay involved with us and have fun with us. In fact, Roy and I would like to get your feedback, and the way to do that is at feedback@realrecognition.com. And matter of fact, in these last segments now, we've started a new piece where as we get your questions and comments to each show, we're going to respond in this fourth segment to some of your questions and how we can address your needs better as well. So please do give us feedback, feedback@realrecognition.com. Next week, we are going to have the pleasure of having Monica Diaz, the author of Other Esteem, to discuss regaining the passion and value to others. So until then, we look forward to having you back as soon as we can next week. Thanks for listening to Real Recognition Radio. For more information about the Recognition Management Institute, you can visit us at www.realrecognition.com. This is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson reminding you all to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.